I find that the most popular readings, whenever we have weddings, when I see Catherine's here, her wedding's coming up, but so many times couples choose either the first reading from Genesis, which talks about the institution of marriage, or the gospel, whether Mark or Matthew, where the words are saying, "For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." Therefore, and this is part of the marriage vows, what God has joined together, no human being must separate. These are powerful words. What do we believe about marriage? Is marriage something that we create? Is it something that's just a private thing between two people? Or is it this a very call from God? Whenever we sit down with seminarians, every single seminarian can stand up and say, "This is why I believe that God is calling me to be a priest." My experience is that we don't do enough in the sacrament of marriage, because many times I will ask couples, "How is God calling you to be married?" And it's hard for them to articulate. Marriage is a sacrament, just like priesthood. And therefore, there is a call that God has. And when we embrace that, and when we marry in the Lord, that is so different than a civil marriage, so different than any other thing. Because when you get married in the Lord, that is God calling you, God sealing you, and that's a permanent marriage. Bottom line of what I want to say today is that God is the author of marriage. God is the author of life. See, when we understand this, then we have to live according to that. We live in an age, though, right now, in which we live in a fantastic country. I love being in America. But we're playing with definitions. As we play with the definition of marriage, part of my question is, who has the authority to change the definition? I'll give you an example. Years ago, I was teaching high school, and I finished this unit. It was marriage and a couple different subjects, cohabitation, and the girl in the corner, she said, raised her hand, she said, "Father, I don't care what you say. I don't care what my parents say. I don't care what the church says. I don't care what God says. When it comes to my turn, I'm living with my boyfriend, and nobody can stop me." Now, I thought I did a decent job teaching that class, but you know, there's sometimes you go home and you just shake your head and say, I'm put in check right now. That was her move, check. And I didn't know if it was check or checkmate. So I prayed that night, and the next morning I come. I said, "Say, I got a question for you guys. Or I want to explain something that I did. See that flagpole outside? It reminds me of America, liberty, freedom." But it seemed such a distant symbol. So what I did is I took it off the pole. I put some canvas backing on it, and now I put it in my doorway. So in my doorway, people are able to come up and be welcomed into my house as an American as they wipe off their dirty, muddy, grimy feet. I said, "What do you think?" And they said, "You can't do that. That's a sacrilege." I said, "What do you mean, sacrilege?" They said, "You can't do it. You did not give the flag its original meaning." I said, "Yeah, but I think it's a cool thing." They said, "Yeah, but you... See, the government as a whole gave the definition to the flag, and therefore you as an individual do not have the right to recreate, redefine the flag." I said, "You got me on that one. Mary, who invented sex and marriage? God. Well, if God invented it, then he has an original design. If he has an original design, then it is God who created marriage, not government and not individuals. Therefore, by what authority does any government or do you have to change this?" She said, I still disagree with you." Well, I didn't have to go any further. The seed was planted. But I've thought about that many, many times since. And especially now that we're in this debate about who defines marriage. Cardinal Dolan spoke at a Knights of Columbus dinner in California a couple months ago, and he made a statement. It's haunting. A government that presumes to redefine marriage is perilously close to considering not God, but itself as the Almighty. See, this is not a partisan issue. This is not a Democrat versus Republican issue. This, for us as Catholics, is a Catholic issue. This, for us as Christians, whether you are any denomination, this is a Christian issue. It's a discipleship issue. Do I follow the Lord's teaching? Do I see him as first, or do I put somebody else as first? And therefore, as we take a look at this topic of marriage, and I want to move into life, but in this topic of marriage, I heard a statement recently that was very, again, telling. It was by one of our Supreme Court justices. He says, we are on a slippery slope. We are on a slippery slope if we in the government think that we can redefine marriage. Because if we do it for this group or that group, then we have to do it for many other groups. Unless you believe that bisexuals, transsexuals, polygamists don't share the same constitutional rights as you do. That's interesting because, see, we have not seen the end of redefinition. We are seeing only the beginning. When we do that, we lose the standard. Therefore, as Christians, as Catholics, what do we believe? Who is the author? And how do we follow him? Second issue is this is Pro-Life Sunday. There's going to be a life march, or there's going to be a life chain in La Crosse between 2 and 3 o'clock today, if anybody can make it. I've made it many times. We've had many of our young people go to the March for Life in Washington. But the topic of life, the right to life, is first and foremost. There's a couple issues I'd like to bring up. And one is when it has to do with the question of abortion takes the body, but what happens to the soul? This is a question that nobody ever brings into the public arena. I have two experiences in my life that have defined this for me. The first was when I was a deacon. I was chaplain in the hospital at La Crosse. My first weekend on duty, I got called up to OB, and they had early labor on a young woman who she was only 18 weeks into her pregnancy. And I spent the next 4 days a lot of time with that couple. They could not stop the early labor. She lost the heartbeat on one of the twins, and they had to induce. At the time of birth, I did not know which one would have died at that last moment, and so I was there to give conditional baptism. The nurse said, you probably won't even recognize anything. I did. They were both perfectly formed, this long, right down to the fingernail, perfectly formed. I gave each of them conditional baptism. The woman back in her room, a couple people came in and said, you know, you will see them again. You have two little angels in heaven. She said, I guess I don't want two little angels in heaven. I want two little angels on earth. But she understood what they meant. She said, I look forward to the time that I will see them again. This made me think and ask the question, why do we say to the mother who has a miscarriage or a stillbirth, you have two little angels in heaven, or you will see that child again? I cannot imagine something more horribly rude to say to somebody who has chosen an abortion. You would never say to them, you will see those two little children in heaven or that child in heaven. It's insulting. And yet, we say over here, they never were, and over here, you will see them again. Which one is true? You can't have it both ways. It's a kind of schizophrenia that we have and we allow. Therefore, each one of us as believers, not as Republicans, not as Democrats, as believers, where do we stand? What do we believe? And I don't mean just make something up. What do we believe as a church? There was the old theory about limbo, which has never been never been a teaching of the church officially. I saw for the first time where it really came out was written by Pope. It was written by Pope John Paul in 1995, The Gospel of Life. Paragraph 99, I quote it in the bulletin for today because I find that this is so telling and it is so powerful. He says, I would like now to say a special word to women who have had an abortion. And we're going to say, and for men too, who were responsible for it. The church is aware of the suffering and the wounds that you have gone through. The Father of mercies is ready to give you his forgiveness and his peace in the sacrament of reconciliation. You will come to understand that nothing is definitively lost. And you will also be able to ask forgiveness from your child who is now living in the Lord. When we tell women that this is only a choice, and we remove the physical evidence, are we really helping them, or are we not setting them up for a very difficult spiritual problem? See, as a priest, over 26 years, I can't even count how many women I've counseled and how many priests in the diocese have counseled on this topic. I don't see them as women who have found freedom. I see them as women who have become locked, paralyzed spiritually. Example, beautiful young lady I knew. She got into college, made some mistakes, got pregnant. And she said, she told her friends, I have to have an abortion. They told me. I wrote her a 3-page single-spaced letter begging her not to do it. She did not even read the letter. She threw it away. Had the abortion. I told her friends, I said, we got to stay with her because there's going to come a time that it's going to hit her. It was a year later. See, she wanted to be a teacher. She wanted to, you know, do many things, and this just stood in the way. But after a while, her soul caught up with her, her conscience caught up with her, and as much as she tried to push it aside, it came front and center, and she became paralyzed. Her depression got so bad, she could not continue in anything. At that point, she wanted to talk and make her peace with God. When I saw her, she looked like she had aged 30 years. All I know is from that encounter, she never would have been able to get married and be happy. It was too much for her. I saw her as she went through this process, become free, become forgiven, become happy, and she is now very happily married. I saw her years later, did not even recognize her. She came, beautiful woman. She said, remember me? And when she told me her name, I said, I don't even recognize you. She said, I'm doing so well. This is just one example. One example of many, many examples. I think too often we get caught up in, well, what's the political platform for the Democrats? What's the political platform for the Republicans? If we could throw away politics for a second and just say, do you take an issue on this? We must take an issue. Not because I'm Republican, not because I'm Democrat, but because I am Catholic. And I find many times Catholics will choose a political platform and stay there. No matter where you stand on this, we have to speak out. There's going to be the 40 Days for Life. This is going on at this time. What I'm asking is that all of us, I'm going to get a number of these signs. I've got a sign-up sheet in back. But I'm asking people to get these signs. It's not saying be Republican, be Democrat. This means be Catholic. Be Catholic. I would love to see a bunch of these signs lining up Highway 33 and in our yards and saying, I am a Christian. I am a Catholic. Because, see, if we don't witness this, what are we teaching our children? We're teaching them that politics overrides our morality. It's a very dangerous lesson to teach our children. This Pro-Life Sunday, I ask us to think, to reflect, to pray, first and foremost, about the God who created us, the God who instituted, established marriage and family, the one who creates new life and says, let the little children come to me. I cannot redefine life because I don't have the authority. The church cannot redefine life. It doesn't have the authority. The government cannot. And therefore, this is a call to discipleship. As we begin this year of faith next week, this is a time for us to recommit to our God and to say, Lord, teach us not only to believe in you, teach us to love you, teach us to follow you.